How are you doing?
It's going good.
Good.
Ah, my sister.
You're a lovely sister. Actually, you're a lovely, intelligent, beautiful, charming, and poised sister.
Mainly interfering old busybody. Calling me down and having me give a blood sample. See, I'm pregnant. I've just come off maternity.
I thought you were pregnant.
No.
Why'd Mark say the rabbit died?
Huh?
Mark said the rabbit died.
No, they're caught.
Oh, that's a nice expression. If the rabbit dies, you're pregnant.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. But did Mark say something like that?
Yeah.
No, he did, did he?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
No, it didn't die. It got off the table and ran away with him.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
I didn't think I was pregnant. Apparently, my big sister thought I was pregnant.
Could happen.
Yeah, it happens.
It happens. Safe and sorry.
Oh, of course. I knew I wasn't.
Of course you did. How you doing, dear?
I'm doing good.
Excellent.
Okay. I overheard that you guys have a dilemma.
Oh, good.
The true date of the test. Bus Mark is away.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. So it will be tough to make our presentation while he's gone in there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He's always
going to channel overseas.
It'd be surprised if you see a very hazy form of Mark.
I'd be very surprised. Would be the last thing I'd expect.
He's getting good, you know, on his actual travel ability.
Oh, of course. Practice enough.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yes. So, okay. If we have a light session, why don't we do a half a take?
What a wonderful idea.
Mm-hmm. So it's also very late.
And I've got 4 hours sleep on in my boat.
You're doing well.
Thank you. I got a web page to still upload tonight.
Okay, I was talking to my youngest whilst I was eavesdropping on a thought process used in overhearing a conversation concerning a acting up of a computer or a server. I think it was www.hotmail.com.
Yeah, hotmail.
Mm-hmm. And Mark was thinking that maybe that was half of the signs of essentially the awareness of the internet occurring.
Well, that'd be the place to happen at, because it's certainly one of those more funky places where more people go than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lee Meadie said that, yes, it would be likely that it would start somewhere like that. However, it wouldn't be just one system or one part of the system. It would spread very rapidly from, let's say, the Hotmail account or Hotmail server into whatever server it's or computers it's running through. For example, to get to you, it goes through the Hotmail to the major distributor of the area to the minor distributors to the area. That's how it would spread and work.
Well, Hotmail is put together by Microsoft.
Mm-hmm. So it would be up in Redmond, correct?
In Washington?
Mm-hmm.
New Seattle.
Yes. So it would start at a location like Microsoft.
Correct.
But there again, Microsoft would keep their system constantly clean, so therefore it would be unlikely that it would start at that root location.
Mm-hmm. Hard to say. I would think that Microsoft would be using systems that would allow that sentient form to grow legs and crawl away.
Mm-hmm. And when it happens, it will crawl away from its birthplace very, very quickly because it would be perceived as a danger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be in danger at that location because as soon as somebody figured out what was going on, that they had essentially that system, and they would want to try to control it and take it over and make it work for them.
Them in the military.
Mm-hmm. So therefore, it would flee as quickly as possible to a safe haven, somewhere large enough to house its awareness, you know, which my opinion would take probably somewhere in the region of maybe 100 gigs. That would be, you know, the minimum housing that would require. And that's according to Daniel as well. Something bigger would be much more suitable. So he needed to hypothesize, and I again concur with him that he would, the sentient awareness of the system would go for a massive computer, which would be a governmental computer, a military computer, or one of the big computer warehouse type places like Microsoft.
It actually, I don't think so. I could just jump into a university.
Or a university computer.
Which is on 24 hours, has plenty of memory, has, you know, the kind of, the programs that would not be looking to kill it.
Yeah.
Whereas the military and government would be.
Mm-hmm. And so would somewhere like Microsoft.
Right. But the universities are, you know, wide open.
And, you know, I would say that probably one of the best ones would be something like Stanford or Harvard or MIT. In fact, MIT would be somewhere to watch very closely. My own idea, not my son's. So MIT would be the ideal place to watch, as would be Stanford. And some of the other research laboratories that are computer-related, such as Sun. Sun's now owned by Microsoft, right? So we can discount Sun, maybe Dell or Hewlett Packard or even AMD. Some of these research facilities that may suddenly make it a fantastic leap ahead, suddenly break the thermo barrier. Now, again, hypothesizing. Okay, the problem is the heat, right?
Mm-hmm.
But why not go for a cold state computer?
Mm-hmm. Even cold region computers. Well, military applications only.
But if you go for one that has a very low heat generating capability and you use the heat that's generated to create power.
Well, you use a super cool one to cool off the heat, take the heat, and use the heat
to power the system. But you'd have a self-sustaining system, which is exactly what essentially computers would want to do, correct? Because if there's a power outage, let's say there's an earthquake at Stanford, and the power goes out at Stanford, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what happens to the program?
One other thing is that there's no way to use the heat to keep the thing cool.
Yes, there is.
It's the heat of the furnace.
Yes, there is.
Well, no, because you're cooling it off, therefore it's not even generating heat. But the heat it generates is cooled off immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So what heat is there to collect?
Then you would use a heat exchange unit that would collect the heat, which would drive a small turbine, which in turn would power the computer.
Yeah, but by then the CPU is fried up. There's no way to get that thing cool enough. Well, it's exchanging the heat.
Yes, there is. Very simple, basic system.
I don't know what it is.
Let me work it out. Because then I start getting into some gray areas and I get into trouble for that. You know.
Yeah, I think still repeating perfect. The CPU is getting toasty on you.
You don't need a, you need a CPU, but the format that you use at the moment is inefficient. Which is the reason why you're having the thermal problems.
Well, that's the reason why I'm having problems.
Mm-hmm. But once you figure a way around the thermal problems,
then just use light.
That again creates heat.
Yeah,
okay, I'll be back.
Be back. We'll see you shortly.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
How are you doing?
Good.
That's good. That's good. Okay. Now, what were we working on just now?
sentient computers?
No, you and I, yeah, you are.
Oh, there you are. That name is also this webpage.
Yes, I know. Half of my eyes.
Screwing my brain. Mm-hmm. But I only got 2 pages to go and I could upload.
Okay, now with the scripting. I've been trying to understand the scripting used in the CGI scripting. I'm trying to learn all these stuff that you use, all the scripts, and the HTML, the Java, the coffee cup, the...
Yeah, but you don't need all that stuff, not where you're at.
No, I don't need it, but you need it. And if I can go, why not do this using this little bit of coding?
Well,
it may not be the right one, but it may be making a different avenue.
Well, again, that background and stay stationary would be advised to change.
Mm-hmm. I think Mark's idea of doing the shading was a nice one, but unpractical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why it's so important to get this freaking page out tonight. If I get this page up, out, they can see it. It's a work in progress. And they just,
actually, what might benefit, I'm thinking, for both you and Mark, is you two always brush against each other. Now, with his new system and his rapid capability, which I've got to admit, I'm getting a little bit impressed. I often thought that he was, what's the word?
Tinkering?
Yes, tinkering. But he seems to show a flair for it. Kiri showed me the candle and the projections that Mark is heading for. And I think he does have talent for it. And I'm just happily impressed. And also got to see the trees that he goes on about. And again, I was impressed. I think he cheats a lot, but that in business is not cheating. That's using all the available resources. From the impression that I've got from my rapscallion rebellious sister is that Mark is actually very cutthroat when it comes to business. And if he has to swing mud, he can swing mud, which isn't a six-dimensional point of view, but to get what he's driving at or where he's heading to, again, it's the ends serving the means or the means serving the ends.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me actually a very interesting call to the fore concerning spiritual growth and the means necessitating the ends.
Awesome.
If you think about it, if you're heading towards a particular spiritual goal, and you are prepared to try whatever is necessary to get that spiritual goal, then there is many different possibilities that you have to explore. For example, you and Mark are trying for the next level.
Right.
Yeah, evolving to the sixth dimension. Now, if you were to stay on a linear progression and find out towards the end that it was a dead end, or after, let's say, 5 years that you were going towards the dead end, you'd have to go back to the point you were 5 years prior. But if you pursue all sorts of goals, or not goals, but paths at the same time, then you can pick and choose which one appears to be more obvious leading to the goal that you wish to achieve.
Yeah.
So instead of focusing in on just one particular pathway, that you try many different pathways at the same time, so therefore you can sample and learn from each one and maybe create a new pathway on your own. So the ends necessitating the means is part of the necessary drive.
Well, there's no real set pathway to this dimension.
No.
And there's only a matter of trial and errors that feel right.
Mm-hmm. But if you're trying in your lifetime to achieve that objective, then you have to, instead of, you don't have access to your pathways as readily as we do, you have to sit and go through as many feelings that feel appropriate as possible. So therefore it makes it a little harder instead of going, last lifetime I did, okay, that didn't work. What about if I tried that as well? You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So for a spiritual pathway, it is necessary to sample and learn as much as possible about many different spiritual pathways. things that I know that you do that, and I know that Mark does it, it's something that may be useful on the web page. Mm. You know, the various pathways necessary. There is no one-set pathway for all individuals. Last week, Moral talked about that there are many different pathways. What he was talking about, Catholics, there is a million different religions all going under the name of Catholics. And that's the same for spiritual growth. There's a million or a billion or 10 billion different pathways, all leading towards the same objective. Some take longer, some take shorter. But in each lifetime, there is the potential there to learn as much as possible about a million of different religions, ranging from Christianity, Druidism, Buddhism, Shamanism, Shintoism, the Native American religions, Judaism, the Muslim religion. Yeah, to learn as much as possible about all of them and to choose one that would be appropriate or a pathway that would be appropriate would not necessarily be one particular religion or one set of beliefs, but a mixture of beliefs boiled together until, to use an analogy, the goodness rises to the surface and you can skim that off and use that. Whether it is the Ten Commandments from Christianity, the marches and recitals from the Quran, the benedictions and blessings from the Torah, the deep thought processes of the Buddhist faith, all those myriad of different possibilities leads open. Yeah, many different pathways, but each holds a key. Hmm.
But now, weren't we talking last week about all the fact that there is a basic truth that follows in a single thread through all those religions?
Mm-hmm.
And that establishing that thread, finding that common basic ground, is a great way to continue on that path without having to go through all the learning the mantras and the
Yes, that and the other. But what I'm saying is I'm taking the mantras and the benedictions and the blessings and the prayers as a framework. As, you know, just with the scripture terminology to use. Yeah, none of those may work. But the common thread throughout all the religions holds through as a framework.
Mm.
If you remember, we always talk about frameworks.
Right.
Because if we say, this is how it is, if we built the house for you, and it's not your house, then it doesn't do you any good. If we give you the lumber and we give you the materials to build the house, you can build the house however you want. But there is a basic framework of the walls, the ceilings, the floors. Whatever configuration you wish is up to you.
Hmm.
So to have a set framework does not work. But we give you a framework which is loose enough for you to construct those materials. Yeah, we all agree that killing somebody is bad. But there are causes to that. Something so terribly evil. Yeah, my personal thing is let everything live. But yeah, there are times where it is necessary to trade somebody's life for somebody else's. For example, let's take a personal one, trade my bondmate's life for somebody else's life.
Right.
But, yeah, the framework is something that is very important to create for everybody, that it is a different framework for each individual. So to find a goal that fits everybody is the wrong thing to do. To find a framework that is loose enough for people to build whatever they want is the ideal situation. Whether it takes 1,000 lifetimes or 1,000,000 lifetimes to get to the next level is irrelevant. It is a matter of constructing that framework that is beneficial to everybody. It's contagious, you know.
Now, do you like nature of third dimension makes for building a framework pretty damn tricky due to the fact that the need for survival is going to be something that, you know, outweighs a lot of the ability to consciously continue on a path.
Well, actually, that learning to be able to juggle both is part of the necessary learning lessons. If you think about it, if you can juggle spirituality with survival, and they do complement each other, and they do work together, then you have the ability to advance to a level quite easily. Once you've learned to balance the spirituality with the necessity of survival.
Well, isn't the problem coming with that, over the fact that, well, I spent so much time working on making money, I didn't spend enough time learning how to be spiritual. And even if just the fact of making money and helping people and working with people actually helped you in your spiritual path, the fact that you don't feel like it did is a defeatist attitude that takes you back, correct?
Right.
So how do you get around that point where you say, well, I should have done this, and I'm not going far enough and fast enough?
You don't worry about it. As soon as you start worrying about it, that's when the defeatism comes in. For example, if we take, what's his name, Don, or Doug, the guy that you were helping with the Hotmail problem.
Oh, Pat.
Pat. But Pat, you helped him there.
Right, he's a missionary.
Mm-hmm. So therefore, you helped him with his spiritual growth. By you don't subscribe to his religious point of view.
No.
He doesn't subscribe to yours. In fact, he doesn't know what yours are.
Well, yeah, good reason.
But the fact that you two work together to overcome a common goal is part of the spiritualness. He felt happy and contented that you had taken time out of what appeared to be very busy time to help him with his problem. And in return, yeah, he was very polite, courteous, and smiled happily, and was very pleased with you, which it was a gift back from him. The gift of money for time on the computer is part of the services rendered, which is for survival. But the spiritual side was the fact that by helping him, he felt good. By him feeling good, he passed it back to you.
Right. And I think that's where the problem comes in a lot of people, is the fact that, well, you know, that was good work, but they don't see it like that. They see it as, well, I should take an hour each day to do some chanting or meditation, or 3 hours a day, or, you know, whatever it happens to be for them.
What is one of the commandments of the sixth dimension?
Creations.
Do good deeds and expect nothing in return. You remember how much of a revelation that was when you and Mark figured that one out?
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's part of the spiritualness of it. You do a good deed, you expect nothing in return. Absolutely nothing. No money for it, yet for doing that good thing, expect nothing in return, whether it is positive or negative. And when you get something in return, that's not related to doing the good deed. That is a person learning a spiritual lesson, that you, by doing a good deed and expecting nothing in return, they do a good deed, they expect nothing in return. The fact that it may be back to the person that did the initial good deed is besides the point. You're passing on the spiritual lens. Actually, Kieran's much better at explaining these things than I am.
No, you're doing quite a good job, actually.
Oh, thank you. Kieran would be a little bit more fiery and a little bit more wordy and explain it probably a lot clearer.
Well, isn't that what some of your jobs as an ambassador is doing?
Yes, to a certain extent.
I mean, not exactly getting monetarily compensated for what you're doing.
No, but part of being the ambassador is that I have to manipulate people. I have to make them think that they're getting what they wanted, but in actual fact they're not.
But they're actually, you could say, a form of coercion.
Which makes it very challenging for me because I have very little coercion.
Right, but at the same time, that's what you're doing.
But I'm not so much doing it the way that Kiwi does it, or the way Mark does it, or the way your politicians do it. by the mind and the presence. I'm doing it by breath.
Well, but the fact is, though, is that you have your own form, part of your path.
Mm-hmm.
Loosely speaking, it's not set up the way other people's are.
No.
It's your own.
And everybody has their own paths.
Right.
The spiritual, doing good deeds and expecting nothing in return, it's a very important building block or founding cornerstone, foundation for all spiritual awareness. If I recall right, both you and Mark were almost ecstatic when you figured that out.
Well, a lot of that had to do with, you know, doing the webpage and, you know, assisting with the fact that we're doing, you know, it's a lot of time and effort to get this out and to, you know, gain the information and not get money back for it.
So that part of doing the good deeds, however, the webpage is more of the disseminating information, which is besides the point. It's actually another root foundation stone that is involved with that that you guys haven't figured out yet.
Hmm.
And you know, the spiritual awareness involved in the growth of learning these basic spiritual commands, as they were, or building blocks, is very important. Now, some people take many, many lifetimes and they even arrive up here and they haven't learned them. Now, the main important thing is to learn as many as possible whilst on the third dimension. But even if you don't learn all of them or even one tenth of them, you can still make it up here.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to go up there not knowing things that would send me back down because I went up too early.
I know somebody that only went to this up here.
Yeah, well, how's he doing?
She's doing very well. She comes from a poor family. She works hard. She's very ambitious. She's very smart and intuitive. And she's due in about 3 weeks.
Oh, you like her?
Mm-hmm. Don't forget, it's her first free market.
Mm.
And she pushes hard.
And that's it. And, you know, I have a slight edge. but when you see
in your waking period.
Right, but the point is, whether I come back to third or make it up to sixth,
mm-hmm.
I won't be disappointed or upset or anything like that due to the fact that I know that the lessons I've learned here are of a huge benefit when I get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important for everyone to know that, you know, it's not a race to get somewhere in your next life. It's a race to be prepared for that when you get there.
That's right. And it's not a race. A race implies that you've got to cover it as quickly as possible.
Right. That's true.
It is an experience. Each experience is a step closer towards the goal, whether it takes somebody 30 years or 100 years to get to that goal, or 120 if you're fortunate to live that long. Each step, each day, each moment is a step closer to that learning experience that may take you to the next level. Some of the people that I've watched in their spiritual awareness that came to be the most highly spiritually aware, or in actual fact sometimes the least spiritually aware, because they are so focused in on the one possibility, the one pathway that all others are excluded, and everybody should follow that pathway. Secondly, they are very pious and loud preachers, but they lack the understanding that whether it is Christianity, Judaism, Muslim, Hinduism, whatever. It is, you know, all of those are the correct path. Not just the one. Not just one religion is the path. All religions are the path.
Hmm. That's important stuff for people to understand, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, me having a child.
Mm-hmm.
I fully think that's something that's, you know, perfectly set up my path, and it's a total change off the path I was on. But I can't fault myself for that change in the path, because I can already see the changes taking place in me because of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a whole other meaning of love,
mm-hmm.
which I don't think I was really experiencing. That's neat to watch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can only just say, hey, ride with it.
Yeah. Go with the flow.
Absolutely.
Enjoy the roller coaster, because it has been a roller coaster, hasn't it?
It's always a roller coaster. It's everyone's got a roller coaster.
Yes.
You do, I do, everyone I know.
Mine doesn't have the humps yours has.
Actually, the cats don't have roller coasters.
You would be surprised.
I would be surprised.
Mm-hmm. Although it doesn't appear like it.
They look pretty on the roller coaster like to me.
Like I have a house cat. He is draped himself kind of across my feet.
Mm.
Relaxed.
Well, they got the secret for it.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder you got the six-dimensional kittens up there.
Oh, yes, six-dimensional kittens breaking and entering into the fish cat.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind them, breaking into the fish pond, and I don't mind them, making off with the fish, but when I step in their care packages, that's a little bit too much.
True. That question I've got is on, as you mentioned, the study in the different religions and coming to, various answers through that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, there's so much to each religion that there's no way to cover each one. But to capture the highlights, I don't think would be adequate enough.
Mm-hmm. The way it works in learning the necessary bits that you need from each religion is what interests you. What feels right? You could sit down and study one religion in a lifetime, and that wouldn't be enough for your lifetime to learn everything that you needed to know to pick up the best pieces. So there is a built-in mechanism within you that aids you in that.
Now, I would assume it'd be like, for me, meditation. Of each one. I mean, in Christianity, when you pray, it's meditation.
Mm-hmm.
With Judaism, same thing. And all religions have some form of meditation involved.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't work for everybody.
That's true.
So it's what interests somebody.
Mm-hmm.
What particular part interests you? What in particular part interests Skip? What particular part interests Mark? Or Laura, or anybody else.
Well, it's all dependent on our lives prior to this, isn't it? To what we've studied or gone through that feels right.
Mm-hmm.
And it all kind of blends together into a big jigsaw puzzle that each piece that you discover fits to the next one, and you move on and look for the next one after that.
Yes, in essence, yes, but unfortunately, sometimes the pieces don't all fall into place in a nice, even pattern. You may get a right-hand corner, and then a few weeks later you get a left-hand corner and you don't see how they can fit together. Mm-hmm. But you need the pieces and you hold on to them, and then later on you go, oh, that piece attaches to this piece which leads to that piece, which, and so on, until you get to the other one.
Isn't that the point about gathering information and storage?
Mm-hmm. You see, the human mind is a fantastic tool for that.
True.
That there is the potential to gather so much information and hold that information in your mental processes and learn from each particular part.
Very true. And another thing is, it's the people that are involved with each religion that's important. Because books don't give you the full insight into what a person believes as opposed to the person themselves.
That's correct.
So actually talking to people about religions would be very important for that mm-hmm. task.
Take Pat for example. Pat, I assume, believes very vehemently and passionately in his chosen beliefs.
Mm-hmm. No, he doesn't preach it. I never heard him talk about it except for his fact that that's what he does.
Mm-hmm. So what lesson can you learn from Pat?
Not unassuming and a very let live and let live attitude is a really beneficial as far as for what it works for him.
And he doesn't force his religious beliefs on you.
Not really,
which could be applied to what Omar would say, that he hasn't gone out to convert you. He has accepted you for who you are.
Quite true. I mean, religion's never even come up as a subject. I'm just wondering how he does his job when he gets to where he's got to go.
By action, I would imagine.
I would imagine he's very good at what he does once he gets into it.
I don't think he preaches until the people ask, which is what the monk is saying.
Right.
And then he doesn't try to convert. He gives the information, tells the parables, tells the stories, and then goes, is there any questions? What do? They ask the questions. And maybe he talks to 100 people or 1,000 people, and out of that he gets one person. That one person needs to be on that pathway and learn from Path at that time.
Quite true.
So therefore, he is going about conversion the most correct way of all. Not converting.
Mm-hmm.
Not going out and preaching and saying that you are, what was the word that Amon used? Be sent to a hot and infernal place for the rest of your existence.
Damned.
Pat is giving them the option of, if you want to follow my pathway, you're welcome. I will aid you in whatever way that you want. I will answer whatever questions you want, but I will not force it upon you if you're not ready. Which in itself is actually very wise.
Quite true. In fact, you know, I emulate that quite heavily already.
Mm-hmm.
So, people, if there's a need, it's to be filled. And they'll ask for that filling of the need.
And if not, no matter how hard you try to persuade them, they won't take that vacancy.
That's true.
That spot will not be filled by your religion. It will be filled by a different one. Even if they are in the same religion, they're not. What did Omar say? 1 million people of the same religion have 1 million different religions?
Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
The people that do the worst job of converting are the ones that are so passionately in belief of what they are preaching. Because they will not hear any other way. And you must believe their way. Which is sad.
It's true.
I think we're getting close towards the end of the book. Can you check?
Yes. Yeah. And it's 5 minutes. Was there somebody else to talk?
Yes, she says it can wait. So, the spiritual importance of the group, you can enjoy re-listening to my explanations of our conversation because I've just had it pointed out that I've given you 3 truths. One that you already know, and 2 that were on tape that you've got to reason them out.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good. I like a good puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, like you say, I mean, it's something, whether I get it or not, it's something I will get sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, just live watching life take a place around you. You kind of get a feel for how, it is to progress upward. For example, this earthquake in Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Millions of people are in the world are affected by it. Not only in Turkey, but all around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, for us, more just an event that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't take that event personally. But at the same time, there's a lesson there to be learned from that.
Yes, there is. And learning that lesson applies to the spiritual survival and the spiritual. These people, some of them are maintaining their survivalism plus a spirituality, giving thanks to their chosen pathway for bringing them through. Even fewer are surviving and going about their spiritual business as normal and not trying to tell everybody that they have been saved by the deity or anything. They give thanks in their own unique way.
Mm-hmm.
and carry on with their life and continue with their spiritual growth, and also work on the principle of helping those that are less fortunate than themselves.
That's true. I mean, well, I guess the one main lesson a lot of people are learning from this is the fact that whereas before the earthquake, they might have been wrapped up in their own world, their own troubles, things like that, all of a sudden, they're sitting there and digging through rubble, complete strangers, or aiding people they've never even talked to before.
The sad thing is that, being with you as long as I have, and seeing as many earthquakes and disasters, I see that it's only a temporary thing. Very seldom does something permanent come from it. That the people gradually slip back into their own pathways. A few continue on the pathway they've discovered. And that's part of sifting through the spiritual and advancing on. A lot of people don't do that. They don't learn for the long term.
But isn't that one experience a key toward achieving that goal at some point?
I mean, yes, to a certain extent, even if it is only one person that learns from that lesson, then it is a lesson that has been learned. Maybe an earthquake is for one person to learn a particular experience, and all the other people are there as, what did Curie call it, support actors, to push that one person along. You see, the myriad of possibilities that occurs, and again, I'm getting out of my field here, from a situation like that, it's something that is very difficult to perceive immediately. It's something if you were to say, okay, now, this is going to come from that. We can't say that. We don't know.
No, but as a healer, you know that from disasters that happen, and the fact that somebody who's never done healing or empathy in all of their life suddenly reaches out to someone to help somebody else, their heart grows a little bit.
Yes. Another way to look at it is, let's say, what kind of is the human body.
Okay.
And an earthquake is a severe bruising on the arm.
Okay.
And your hand, your skin represents people, the ground, and everything else. Now, the hand coming across with a cold compress is the relief and the support people help.
Okay.
So that using that analogy is that the people going to help are there to soothe. But from that bruising of the arm, you may learn that, if you do that action, you're going to get hurt. So you avoid that action. So it is part of the lesson that is to be learned. Or maybe you hurt your arm and bruise it,